This is Cindy Kraft, President of the Home Health Section of the American Physical Therapy Association, and I'd like to welcome you to today's short podcast on the functional reassessment in 2015, clinical and billing issues. As I said, I'm the current president of the section. I've been in home health now for more than 20 years, from the frontline clinical position to a national consultant and educator on a variety of issues impacting therapy and clinical care in the home health setting. I'm excited to talk to you today about the reassessment. I think the changes that we welcome in 2015 to the timing of the reassessment have caused many to be quite celebratory about this being different. But we have to make sure we are very clear about what the expectation remains in terms of timing and content, as well as how do we handle if we miss one. Yes, the rules are different, but I still am not a perfect human being, and I still may do one of these late or forget. So what do we have to do in those situations? But first, a disclaimer. These podcasts are intended to provide professionals with some guidance on a variety of confusing regulatory and practice issues, but please keep in mind that regulations change over time, regulators issue updates, and some regulations, such as state practice acts, may trump other regulations. As a professional, it is your responsibility to familiarize yourself with regulatory resources and documents, making certain that you have accurate and current information. While we can help to familiarize you with regulatory references and rationales, you should always go to the regulatory source for clarifications and the final word. That was very abundantly clear with the functional reassessments. I honestly believe that many people read those regulations this time because they were a little disbelieving that we got the kind of change that we did, contrasting the timing expectations of the functional reassessment from 2014 to 2015 going forward. January 1st, 2015 marked the end of the 13-19 requirement, which means it took out the single discipline discussion versus the multiple discipline discussion versus who went first and who forgot to tell anybody. All of that chaos ended for new episodes beginning on or after January 1st. Now, January, bit interesting, because if the patient's episode, not start of care date necessarily, but episode, began prior to January 1st, we still had a transitional issue of, yeah, the old rules still applied. But as those patients continued to move forward, and if they were recertified and started a new episode, then hallelujah, we got to use the new rules. And the new rules actually are quite simple. All three therapies have officially been separated. The three-headed monster has been divided, so hallelujah, we're all separate now and responsible for our own piece. And the requirement is simply stated, minimally every 30 days, a functional reassessment is required. Let's be careful here. The minute it says minimally, I've already seen a flurry of emails about it's the last 3 to 5 days. It has to be day 30. All of this, we're not really sure what this means. Oh, my gosh, please, 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 let's not escalate this again to the level of having a conversation with CMS to be more specific on this. Let's just accept minimally every 30 days, smile, thank them, and then deal with this as professionals. Because all that really means is a patient cannot go longer than 30 days with a therapy and not be functionally reassessed. Where you do your reassessment in that 30-day span is up to you and based on the presentation of the patient, recognizing that whenever I do one, for whatever reason, I have opened the next 30-day window. So if I choose to do one because it correlates to the supervision of a therapy assistant visit and I'm there anyway and it makes sense to do it, then I can do it and I have opened the next 30-day block of time. If I've gone out and done a reassessment because the patient went to the hospital and came back and was resumed by the organization and now I'm going out to reevaluate what's going on with them post-hospital, yep, that can count as a reassessment and I have 30 days from that to get it done. So we always have to understand that kind of fluidity is incredibly important for us to protect because it allows us to do it more about patients than, oh my gosh, I got to hurry up and run around and do it now. Here's the catch though. with greater flexibility, we have to be careful that we don't lose sight of the intent of these visits. And I say that because all of that 13, 19, 30 we've lived through since 2011 has made people very OCD about the timing of these reassessments. And I can see why. I mean, organizations, especially large ones, actually had nearly full-time staff policing this issue, trying to make sure everybody knew where everybody else was and that you went in the right visit in the right time, and if there was a cancellation, how did we adjust it? And I mean, it logistical challenges galore. But the problem is it became such a discussion of when we did it that we kind of lost track of why we're doing it. And, yeah, don't give me the why is because Medicare made me. In our respective therapy programs, we were never taught that you did an initial assessment, made an initial plan, and it proceeded without variation, without revisit, without discussion until the end of the order and you discharged. The idea that we are somehow omnipotent and that plan we write today is going to be the best possible plan for this patient 3 weeks from now, we know that's ridiculous. The patient changes over the course of care. They progress faster than we thought. They may hit a plateau for a period of time. They may have challenges. And our plan needs to show that it changes based on the presentation of the patient, as indicated. The idea that I wrote a plan now and it's always going to work completely flawlessly and I will always have goals met that I wrote, you know, 3-4 weeks ago doesn't even make sense, okay, in terms of the realistic nature of trying to plan care and deliver care in the home health setting. What I believe has happened is the somewhat laborious task of making those changes, of potentially needing a new order or updating a care plan, has made us think that there's safety on the initial eval of just being very vague and general in our goals and in our statements, because that way we won't have to. Yeah, the problem with that is all the plans start to look the same, and that raises additional red flags in terms of, does this really require the skills of a therapist? But all of those kind of feelings about how we write this can manifest themselves with problems on the documentation of a functional reassessment. First and foremost, it is not a reevaluation. You may do a reevaluation, let's say post-hospital transfer back, because it needs to be done. You haven't seen them in several weeks, and you want to formally determine exactly what's been going on since they were in the hospital. That's fine. But a reassessment does not require us to complete a whole evaluation again. It does not insist that every measure you took the first time has to exactly be done again on every reassessment. The issue of the reassessment is this. I'm going out there to look at my patient and the plan of care to determine if therapy has been effective to this point and should it continue. In order to justify that, and I don't mean it in an adversarial combat way with a payer source, in order to come to that decision yourself, you don't just walk in the door and say, hey, I like that dog. I think I'll keep this patient for another 2 weeks. You don't do that. You look at a patient and you say, is he where I thought he would be at this point? Has he progressed and got improved if I thought he was going to? Has he stabilized like I was shooting for in maintenance to try to prevent this decline? Has the therapy up until now done what I thought it was going to do, what I intended it to do? That's one part. But then the question simply remains, is additional skilled therapy warranted? And that is not met because I have an order for 2 more weeks. It is not met because I just say continue PT. The clinical decision-making behind it is what needs to be there, which is why it references in the regulation objective measure. Not as a mandatory, you better repeat everything you did before, but provide some objective information to support why you said continue. Many organizations have gotten so tied up in what form they said you should use. Let's just be clear. Medicare has not given us an official form for the functional reassessment. It has not given us a list of exactly which areas need to be in it. It simply says you need to determine if the therapy is effective and if you should continue with it. And provide insight in your documentation how you came to that conclusion. If it's just continue without substance, we run a high risk, even when it's done at the correct time, of it being denied. You're not sure that what I'm saying is remotely close to accurate? talk to folks in your organization, if you haven't heard already, about the flurry of discussion around the face-to-face and the sheer volume of denials our industry has seen, citing that it didn't meet the expectation and trying to remove payment for the episode. Face-to-face denials overwhelmingly were not about the timing. They were done in the designated time frame. The argument was the content didn't meet expectation. And much like the functional reassessment, they didn't give us a form, they gave us some concepts. And what happened was we didn't meet those targets. We thought if we used certain words or certain phrases or certain comments, that would work. And yes, I understand there's a subjective component to it in terms of interpretation and potentially a motivation for a reason to deny it. I get it. But lesson learned proactively, we need to look at those functional reassessments and ensure that our clinical decision-making is clear. Not because I'm appeasing some payer source, but if you have to ask me or I have to decide, you know, a year from now, why did I continue therapy with Mrs. Smith? And all I see is, well, she walks further than when we started, and she can do more reps than when we started. That tells me about her. That doesn't tell me why I thought I should keep going. That doesn't give me any cues whatsoever about my decision-making. So we need to take credit that we don't just continue services or discontinue services on a whim, and we don't do it simply based on the order of the physician. We have to look at it as a skilled professional and explain to ourselves, so we're very clear, why we're making the decisions that we are. So the notorious weakness of our functional reassessments to date have been we treat them of just a progress update. When I met him, he could walk 10 feet. The goal is 200 feet. He's currently at 100. His strength was 3. The goal was 4. He's currently at 3 plus. Okay, if we just provide these updated things with no analysis, no functional connection, and no clarity around why we should continue, we run a substantial risk of these things being denied. And the scary part is when they get denied on older records, patients we don't see anymore, they will essentially wipe out all the therapy services past that. If they can look at that single visit and say it did not meet the expectations of a functional reassessment, even if every other visit you wrote was so beautiful it made the quality department jump for joy, that you were the poster child for skilled, reasonable, and necessary, it won't matter. They're all toast. So we can't just look at this and say, yay, 1319's gone, and man, this, you know, every 30 day, okay, I can live with that, this is great. Take a moment and look at your content. Look at the content of your peers. Are we able to clearly see that decision making? Because if we've just checked the box, or my personal frustration, making statements, therapy is effective. Yeah, I know the word effective is used in the regulation, but just putting it back in your note, some of them with a checkbox to say yes, oh my gosh, that doesn't have any substance to it that said how you came to that conclusion. None. So take a look at your content before you get totally celebratory and believe your life has gone dramatically better without the 1319. Parts of it has, but take a look at that content. And part of that issue also comes into play that we're not perfect people. Even with minimally every 30 days, there can be a miscue, there can be somebody forgot, somebody was on vacation, we forgot to put it on the schedule, I didn't let you know that I actually did it last week, so it reset the 30. There will be mistakes. So we have to keep in mind how we are told to handle these mistakes. Currently, when we do a reassessment late, the visit we do the reassessment on is considered a covered visit and is paid for. But we are not penalty-free, even in a minimally every 30 days environment, because we did have minimally every 30 days in the past. It just didn't get as much notice as 1319. But when I do one late, the visit I do it on is a covered visit and will be paid. But the penalty is the visit I should have done it on is the one that is not going to be paid for. It's going to come out of the count. We have less of a total number of visit impact than the 1319, because with 1319 we got into issues of multiple discipline and visit counts and all that other stuff. But in this day, now in our arena of minimally every 30 days, we have to keep in mind that a late one will cause the removal of at least one visit from this patient's episode of care. And we cannot be cavalier about that because of the wonderful tiered model of the number of therapy visits and how they interplay with reimbursement. Because let's say I have a patient who may be moving toward that maintenance track and my frequency is low but my duration is longer, I'm seeing them over a longer period of time, and I essentially ended up with six visits, but the sixth visit was a reassessment and it was late, so we lost a visit. Well, that's just one visit. Yeah, that's several hundred dollars that is going to come out of that episode, dropping the total from a six to a five. So a one-visit removal can cause issues on the reimbursement side. So we need to make sure, one, that we don't do these late. That's a very mechanical, make sure it's scheduled, make sure it's done. But always look at compliance as a two-prong issue. Just because I did them all in the right time frame is not a slam-dunk guarantee I can withstand review later. So the content issue needs to be looked at as well. And that's why it has to be the qualified therapist who does these. If it was simply an update to some measures, the assistants absolutely could do that. But we're called upon not just to look at the measures, but to look at the plan and say, do I need to make changes to these? And we need to break the cycle of feeling as though making a change to the plan is somehow a negative. We're not infallible. We're experts. We're skilled. But the patient's progress or lack thereof or how they proceed through the course of care can definitely impact our plan. And when we make those kinds of changes, whether it's increasing something, decreasing something, dropping a goal, adding a goal, that does not mean we've made a mistake. It may feel like it given some of the processes we have to go through to get the order updated or whatever, but put that aside. Clinically, making those adjustments shows active decision-making and actually reflects skill better than generic continue because I said so, basically. So look at those two pieces and recognize that late is still an issue in the minimally every 30-day environment. So I highly recommend we don't take the model, as some already have, of thinking it's literally day 30, and what do I do if I have it scheduled for day 30 and the patient refuses the visit, so now I'm too late, and that's not really my fault. Well, technically, with minimally every 30 days, we are strongly encouraged not to wait to the last minute for that very reason. So we welcome any other additional feedback you have, challenges you may be having with the functional reassessments, and anything that the section can do to help to clarify this, we're more than happy to do. So please direct those questions to the website, and we will follow up on them to the best of our ability.